So this is not to talk about the knee arthritis stuff that there were talks given on a short while ago. This is more the younger or middle-aged high school athlete, college athlete, weekend warrior, what have you, who comes in, they had an injury and they've got fluid on their knee and something's not right. And so causes probably the transient kneecap dislocation is going to be number one. The ACL tear is something we certainly see a lot of. Meniscal issues, the medial and lateral menisci can be torn. Osteochondral injuries is something I've got some slides on that probably is a little bit less familiar to people than the other stuff, and it's maybe kind of scary to see a teenager with a big loose piece of bone and cartilage, and you say, well, do I get them on crutches? Do I get an MRI? Do I refer them? Intra-articular fractures, another good reason to just get those plain films first. And then there are the occasional causes where somebody's had a minor trauma, but they're really in with a gouty flare or an arthritic flare. So I start with the history again. Was there a trauma? Was there not? Is there an effusion or swelling, or was there? Are they having mechanical symptoms? I ask about catching, locking. Has the knee been stuck in one position? Kind of level of pain, level of mechanical symptoms. Instability. An ACL giveaway, sometimes it seems like, is if, the 16-year-old soccer player goes down on the field and they're down for a couple minutes and they get help, and then just trying to get to the sideline, it gives out again. That's oftentimes an ACL story. Prior episodes, that kind of ties more into the patellofemoral events, the kneecap popping in and out of place and that sort of stuff. And, you know, if it's been kind of one and two and three times, it's almost always going to be rehab. And, I don't know how necessary MRIs are. Rehab, brace wear, get your quads back, get your core strength back, all that stuff. It's the people that are popping the kneecap out like 6 and 8 and 10 and 12 and 20 times that we start to operate on, in my opinion. And then you pay attention to age, gender, skeletal maturity. There's the OCD lesion and the kind of 5 to 15-year-old maybe that you want to be aware of, which can be missed on plain x-rays and other things. The gender predominance with regard to ACL tears and concomitant meniscal injuries, much more the young female athlete than the young male, that sort of thing. Exam, try to pay attention to the general exam again, much like the hip, but it's a little bit more focused. You do have to worry about the hip exam on any knee presentation. The association there that a lot of people are aware of is the obturator nerve runs down the inside of the hip and thigh to the inside of the knee. And so a presentation of medial knee pain is, in my mind, maybe a funny hip problem until proven otherwise, especially if maybe you're looking at a 13-year-old boy who's 50 pounds heavier than he should be. You don't want to miss a slipped capital femoral epiphysis or something with medial knee pain. The knee range of motion exam, the effusion or lack thereof in some of the more middle-aged weekend warriors, make sure the extensor mechanism's intact and this isn't a patellar tendon injury or a quad tendon injury. Tenderness along the joint lines, your meniscal exam with McMurray's testing and other things, and then a ligamentous exam, which I always try to do out towards extension. A lot of people won't extend in this setting. 30 degrees of knee flexion and then up in the 90-degree area. And kind of go through that. Imaging, so we start with plain x-rays. You'd want to catch an intra-articular fracture that you could miss on an MRI. I've got an example of that. A patella alta or patella baja from quad or patellar tendon injuries. Significant arthritis that might change your level of really wanting to go get an MRI, which is a pricey test. MRI, we probably see more overuse of an MRI than underuse, and I'll kind of go through some cases now and show you, where would we get an MRI. So case one for the knee stuff is a 16-year-old female, non-contact event on the soccer field, felt a pop, comes in, the knee's blown up. What's this going to be? Yeah, this is supposed to be an ACL, yeah. So the Lachman exam is as you're checking the excursion of the tibia relative to the femur at about 30 degrees of knee flexion. That may be the most sensitive and specific test we have. It's probably what most of us rely on. You can do the anterior and posterior drawer up around 90 degrees. And it's important to kind of look at collateral laxity or lack thereof at 0 and 30 degrees of knee flexion. At 30 degrees, you're going to isolate the collaterals a little bit better. If you get the knee out towards full extension and you have some laxity, you probably have a multi-ligament injury or a significant capsular injury. the knee shouldn't really go wobble side to side significantly out near full extension. So that's just some diagnostic ideas there. So you get plain films on the 16-year-old girl, and you guys may not be able to see, but there's nothing on these. So her physes are closed or closing or recently closed or closed a few years ago probably. And then you get an MRI. So this is a case where you get an MRI when you got a 16-year-old with a bunch of blood in their knee and nothing on plain x-ray. And this is a sagittal image. It's T2 weighted. This is the femur and the tibia. This is anterior and posterior. And through here, we should see a nice black or gray stripe. That's the ACL. And we shouldn't see all this white stuff, which is the lipohemarthrosis. So that's an ACL tear, pretty classic picture. And then when we go in there arthroscopically, this is a view from an anterolateral portal. The shaver here is coming from anterior medial, and this white thing that's kind of folded on itself and not connected to anything is the ACL. So this is a complete ACL tear, just kind of folded down in the front of the knee. This U-shaped area here is the intercondylar notch. So that's what these look like. And then what do? We clean out the ACL stump, leaving this lateral side of the intercondylar notch empty, and then we put a new one in. And then this 16-year-old young lady, I did a hamstring ACL, which is probably my workhorse. I tend to do a bone tendon bone and maybe a college football candidate or a bigger male. And allografts I've been staying away from a lot. There's some recent evidence, some people who are really into this may know, maybe a little bit higher loosening rate, re-tear rate, revision rate with some allografts or cadavergrafts. Case two, this is a 12-year-old this time, same story with soccer, no contact. She's young, she's premenarchal. And so you get x-rays and you see her physes are open and she's otherwise okay. What's the injury that you're looking for on these plain x-rays though in a 12-year-old with a knee full of blood? Soccer injury, felt a pop, doesn't want to move. We'll get to it. It's another case. But you get the MRI on this kid too with the negative x-ray and you see on an axial T2 weighted image the lipohemarthrosis, on the sagittal T1 weighted image no ACL, and so you're going to do the same thing. Torn ACL, prepare the notch here, put her hamstrings in to take the place. In this case, you have the growth plates to worry about. So here I stayed well away from the physis on the femur and used something called suspensory fixation with this metal button way up here and used a staple with just a tiny little short screw staying away from the growth plates here. So that's kind of a 12-year-old issue. Case three, so this is probably more common to a lot of us. This is the 57-year-old guy who's working out in the gym and his knee's now giving away after a workout injury and he can't get out of the car without the knee wobbling and he's swollen. And so you definitely get plain films here, and I would suggest, you know, or put this out there that you'd get weight-bearing plain films. And you see on the left knee furthest from me, he's been through an ACL surgery before, has those two metallic screws in the knee. And on the right knee with this weight bearing, he's got very little joint space left. So this is a case where, you know, he's in his 50s and he's not a teenager and he's the cat is out of the barn a little bit with regard to arthritis and there's bad things coming for this knee regardless. So I wouldn't jump to an MRI right away. I'd probably treat him with rice and therapy and a cortisone shot and kind of see how he does. And then if that fails is when I'd get the MRI in this patient who's a little bit different, as long as he's not too angry about that idea. But then eventually when his ACL ends up torn and his medial meniscus ends up torn, then he will benefit from surgery even at 57 or, you know, not 17 or 12 anymore, but still is going to benefit from having this cleaned up. And so we debride or take out that torn piece of meniscus, leaving only what's healthy. And he's still got a lot of good cartilage here. And then you go ahead and do his ACL too if he's having pivoting over the course of a few months, not as quickly or as aggressively as you do that 12-year-old's knee. Case four, this is a 20-year-old, and he had a bike injury. And he's a few weeks out, and his knee's full of blood, and he won't straighten his knee, and he's in the office. So do you get, so 20, fluid on the knee, do you get x-rays or MRI? And so I'm trying to drill it home to get x-rays. Does anyone see anything here? It may be unfair since I can't zoom for you and you're sitting so far away. But his diagnosis was right here with these plain x-rays. See this piece here? It's pretty subtle. that doesn't belong there. And on an MRI, you might miss it. This looks like an ACL tear, a lot like what I showed you before. It doesn't have all the blood in the knee, maybe. This is a T1 weighted image as part of that, but it's also been a few weeks. But you might miss the fact that there's a fracture if you just jumped right to the MRI. So the point is, again, to get the plain x-rays. On a CT scan, which I don't routinely get, it looks like this. And this is an intercondylar eminence fracture. And then you have to decide, which brand of angry patient do I want? Do I want to fix this and have an angry patient, or leave it and have an angry patient? And so you just pick your poison. So intercondylar eminence fractures you're going to catch mostly on your plain x-rays. They're common in the 8 to 14-year-old. They're uncommon in the adult. When they happen in the adult, it's bad. The outcomes are terrible. There's limited studies out there, 15 people in kind of an expert opinion type trial here and there, and they all have second surgeries and contractures and pain, and they, you know, second opinions. They don't like their doctor. But the mechanism kind of used to be said to be a hyperextension injury. It's also written about a direct blow to the knee or the end of the femur with a flex knee, and maybe that's where some of the bikes and motorcycles come in. But it's basically a tension on the ACL to pull this anterior part of the intercondylar eminence away. And so they come in with pain, fluid on their knee, blood on their knee, and they have a block to extension because that piece of bone is sitting there in the front of the knee. And then the workup, plain x-rays, like we said, possibly the CT. I kind of hate getting CTs if they're not necessary. And then MRI is really more down the road to look at chondral injuries, meniscal injuries, other stuff. There's a classification on these, Myers and McKeever. Basically, is it not bad, a little bad, really bad, or not really fixable? 1, 2, 3, 4. But arthroscopically on that same 20-year-old kid, when we got in there, this is a similar look from an anterolateral portal towards where the ACL should be, and you see this big piece of bone with kind of synovium and stuff grown over it pushed up into the notch. This is why he can't extend his knee, because as he brings his knee forward, this is there in the way. And so you're kind of left with, I know based on the literature this is going to end up badly, what do I do? So I chose to fix it. So we fixed it, and we got an x-ray afterwards, and we said, okay, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good, and it should do fine. It didn't do fine. It took a year to get his motion, and it was not any fun. So that leads right into case 5, and I think this young lady came in right after that 20-year-old. So this is now a 35-year-old. She feels a pop skiing. It's the last run of the trip. It's always the last run of the trip. I don't know why. And but she had a report for me, radiology report, plain x-rays at the ski resort in Colorado. They're negative. So what do you do? So again, I'm just trying to bias you towards get your own x-rays, get new x-rays. And does anybody see anything there? It's again probably not fair. But look at the medial compartment. So the lateral compartment, nice and smooth. And then the medial compartment, there's something stuck up in here. So it's subtle, and I see how they didn't quite notice it in Colorado or whatever. The report didn't read this, but that's a big fracture. And on the lateral, you can see a big piece of this intercondylar eminence extending pretty far back, and on this other view, extending pretty far medial is up. And on a CT scan, this is, I again don't CT scan these people, but this might have been a bigger piece if I had gotten a CT scan. So this time, no way I'm doing surgery. I had just had this horrible experience with this nice 20-year-old young guy, and I'm going to wait this one out. So I tried to, you know, drain her knee, aspirate her knee, get her into a brace extended, try to preserve her extension for later. I ended up using dynamic braces and physical therapy and pain medicines and muscle relaxants, and I saw her very often. And then eventually she had a scope because she was not doing well at all, and a long time had gone by. And so here's her ACL in the center of the knee, kind of a similar picture to what I've been showing, and it's okay. But one picture forward, this is looking towards the medial compartment where it looked like it was off on that x-ray, and this big piece of the articular surface is displaced by several millimeters. And so maybe I should have fixed this one, but I was gun shy. Case 6, this is a high school athlete, goaltender, has an injury, his knee's effused, his plane films are negative. This is another good example of go ahead and get the MRI. MRI is going to be the more sensitive and specific and better test for meniscal stuff, which is what this is going to be an example of. a lot of us, I think we can tell if the back to that 55-year-old guy is in the office with a meniscus tear and the MRI is almost a billing procedure. But for this kid, we actually want to know, do we have a radial tear? Do we have an avulsion of the meniscal root in the back? Do we have a bucket handle tear? What are we going to do to fix this? Kind of examples of these different types of tears. The longitudinal tear, like this is running, I guess, longitudinally. If it's a full thickness longitudinal tear, it's all the way through the meniscus, it's a centimeter or greater in length, or you know, maybe even extends all the way around, becomes more of a bucket handle. We're gonna really try to fix this aggressively. It's got a really good chance to heal. The radial tears are more in this direction. The horizontal cleavage tears that you read about on these MRI reports on the more middle-aged folks are in the plane of the screen, so it's hard to really show you. Lots of different tears that you read about in the report, so they are actually different. And then so this patient, the high school goaltender that we started with, had an unstable meniscus tear. This is between the femoral condyle, the tibial plateau, and this is a metal probe pulling on this unstable longitudinal tear. And so this is fixable. This is not a problem. So this we fix and try to keep that meniscus in there. We don't really have any great proof that we're preventing arthritis or anything or saving the world, but it's got to be better to have more of your meniscus. We can say that. Here's an MRI, and this is jumping from the teenage goaltender back to the more middle-aged patient. And this is an example of a different meniscal tear. This is the femur and tibia in the frontal plane. The lateral meniscus is this black triangular bumper looking thing over here, and the medial meniscus on this side, and you see these white and gray disruptions through that black triangular structure. So if you're looking at your MRIs with patients on a follow-up visit, that's a pretty good example. And this one looked like this. This is the medial femoral condyle, the medial tibial plateau, my probe coming in to pull this meniscus out that was flipped kind of under itself. And it looks like this. So this big piece of meniscus doesn't belong. And you just clean that up for these people, and this person gets better and likes you. This is more fun than the hip patient. Case 7. This is an example of sometimes it just doesn't work out, and then you just have to. This is just kind of an impressive set of MRIs. This young guy came to see me a couple years ago, and it had 6 attempts at ACL surgery. He was unstable in the frontal plane, in the sagittal plane, rotationally in the axial plane. And I got an MRI and x-rays and all kinds of stuff. And this is his tibia on a T one-weighted sagittal image. And from here to here, this is all kind of biocyst and old screws and old allografts. I got some more examples of it. Another sagittal. Here's a frontal image. So he had kind of lost 40% of his plateau here, the top of his tibia. And so in arthroscopically, this is pretty crazy. This is the crater in his tibial plateau. And so I just bone grafted this area. That's the same area that you saw in MRIs. I couldn't find his old plane films. Just to get this to fill in, I later went back and reconstructed his ACL and also the outside of his knee, the so-called posterior lateral corner, which had never been done. It was probably why the ACL kept failing. Case 8, how are we doing on time? He's not here? Okay. He's not going to come? Okay. It's just me. Can I go back and say some of that slower then? Okay. So case 8, and then we'll just do the post-test questions, and if it's probably silly for me to do Bill's talk, but if he shows up, he'll do it. If not, no big deal. Case 8, this is the 21-year-old active duty military, nice guy, at least 10 patellofemoral dislocations. So this is where I was saying before as far as the kneecap problems. A lot of the pain, apprehension, I think my kneecap's popped out once or twice. That really, I think in most of our hands, is physical therapy, get your quads back, get your core back, grow out of it, avoid surgery. Patellofemoral surgery is bad for you. But this is 10 times and it wasn't gonna end. On his AP and lateral x-rays, his kneecap sat too high, he had patella alta, and then on the kind of skyline or merchant views, he had this going on. And I actually forget which side was which, but he's a match set. He's got this increased lateral translation and tilt. The kneecap should sit a little bit more over the trochlear groove. And he's got two-sided issues. So this guy was probably, if the term multi-directional instability of the shoulder means anything, he was probably kind of an MDI patient with his kneecaps. And he coped, and he was just fine until he had that one high school football or basic training injury. and now he's not coping so well on one side, and his kneecap's popped out 10 times. So for him, we go in there arthroscopically, we find some chondromalacia, some thinning and cracking of the cartilage on the underside of the kneecap, not terrible, but there. And then we do a lateral release. So the idea is take tension off of the tight lateral side, rebuild the floppy medial side, and try to make that stop happening. You probably sacrifice some motion. And so this lateral retinaculum was tight, and we can arthroscopically cut that and bring the kneecap a little bit back over. And then with fancy buttons and things, we can rebuild the so-called medial patellofemoral ligament, which is probably the key check rein to stop these dislocations. These do one of two ways in my hands. How's he doing particularly? He's early on, and somewhere between kneecap dislocation 5 and 10, he started getting into pain medicine. And so he's having a decent go of it. His pain medicines are gone, so that's good. That's maybe the biggest thing that'll come out of it. And his kneecap is not dislocated again, but he's only a few months out and his motion is poor. But I'll tell you in a year, really. But yeah, and then the other way that those do is they do very well. And I think that as I get smarter and do this for longer, it has to do with how tight I put that new ligament in. I probably have over-tensioned a few kids, but I'm learning. So case 9, this is another one of the ones that a lot of people don't feel comfortable with or know a lot about, but it comes in a lot if you see teenagers or kids. So 15-year-old male, high school basketball. The parents are concerned because the kid's knee is swollen. He can't move it right. He's limping. The kid is concerned because high school fall practice or tryouts are about to start. He doesn't want to miss anything. But he's an example of somebody you get an MRI in a 15-year-old with swelling and locking. And so this is an axial T2 weighted image, the kneecap in the front and the femur below. So it's an axial image of the femur. This is the lateral side and the medial side. This is posterior and anterior. And this area on the back of the lateral femoral condyle doesn't look right. And on a frontal image or coronal image, this is medial, this is lateral, there's the fibula, and here's the posterior most aspect of the lateral femoral condyle, here's the tibia, and this area is not good. And so this brings up OCD, and I figured this is a little bit more complex than ACL for a lot of you, or meniscus, so I'd give you a little bit of info on this one. OCD, osteochondritis desiccans, the term was coined a long time ago, Koenig in 1880s, but it's a misnomer. Initially, when people thought about this, you know, well over 100 years ago, they thought there's inflammation of the bone, the cartilage, the joint surface. And in the pathologic studies, you know, in this past century, it never really bears out that way. So it's not an inflammation thing, but the name has stuck. So it's osteochondritis desiccans or OCD, or people will say osteochondral defect or injury. And what's the real cause? It probably is multifactorial. There's different camps that push big trauma, repetitive microtrauma, blood supply, genetics, inflammation. So it's probably multifactorial. What is it? It's a fragment, an osteochondral fragment, meaning bone and cartilage, that detaches from the underlying or subjacent bone. And the underlying bone that lets go, if you will, has a normal blood supply, as opposed to osteonecrosis, or what used to be called avascular necrosis, like we see in the hip a lot. That underlying bone near these fragments is dead, is avascular. So there's the difference. And so OCDs affect two populations. One is the juvenile OCD, that's kind of the 5 to 15-year-old I think I've got here, but their physis are open. And then you have the adolescent or young adult, and that usually shows up by about the age of 30, 35, 40, or you know, maybe it's kind of a minor one and shows up later. Staging, 1, 2, 3, 4, not so bad to really bad, like most orthopedic staging systems. It's not as hard as reading an EKG or anything. But so for this kid, back to the 15-year-old who wanted to go to basketball practice, this wasn't going to play basketball. This was bad. So this is a view from an anterolateral position looking straight in at the lateral femoral condyle, this round surface, the lateral meniscus down below, and you see some of the lateral tibial plateau. And this entire thing is loose. This is a grade or stage 4, whatever you want to call it. But it's a 15-year-old, and I was there, and it was fixable, and why would you not fix it is kind of my way of looking at it. You can always go back and do crazy things later if it fails. But so we fixed this. So we put it into place and kind of provisionally pinned it. And probably my error here, if Bill was here, he'd probably laugh at me, or Andy Mahoney will laugh at me back there. I used a biocomposite screw, meaning it's kind of a biologic agent, like a PLLA mixed with some stuff that's supposed to turn to bone. And if I could have this one back, I would have just put an old-fashioned metal screw in. But he did a